You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
So have you ever like been in like a post office and you're looking at the most wanted signs and you're like, hey, I know that guy. Have you ever looked at that poster and thought, hey, that looks like a guy who was in a bunch of movies in the 90s that were kind of good, but then I totally lost track of that dude. Or was it even the 90s? It was the early aughts. Whatever the hell happened to Josh Hartnett. But apparently, he is still working and, you know, making movies. And we've got one that's coming out very soon, like every other movie made in the era of the pandemic. It has lost its theatrical release, but it will be coming out on streaming services and video on demand. I am talking about a Canadian thriller called Most Wanted. I believe it was some markets. It's called Target Number One. Now, I know what you're thinking. Those are two very generic titles that tell me nothing about this movie, which, by the way, is kind of generic. But fortunately, I am joined by a crack team of wanted criminals, also known as reviewers, who are here to share their thoughts on this film. I'm joined by London.
Hey.
Lewayne.
Hey.
Joshua the Hunter.
Wait, you said crack team. Are we doing crack on this review?
Is that No. We don't put that shit on tape, man. That is the first. No, this is our cover, man. You're going to blow the one of us.
You'll get stuck
cover.
In Thailand if you do that.
Wait, I thought it was heroin. Isn't this about heroin?
Look, do you know how much fucking drugs Ben has up his ass right now? Don't blow his cover.
Oh, and that's just to get through this movie.
That explains his reviews.
And now he is going to reach into his ass and pull out a brief, concise synopsis of this new film.
Yeah, I like how you started this micro with Canadian thriller, which one is an oxymoron, two doesn't really describe this movie.
Hey, let's be nice to the Canadians.
Hey. all right, so this movie, we're following Josh Hartnett's character, who is, I swear I had his name here, but this is the briefest Wikipedia article I've ever seen, but he's a investigative journalist.
Victor,
there you go.
Yeah.
He is an investigative journalist, like, you know, the most, like, I'll go undercover and get you the most deep story that you ever heard about any crime or anything you ever want to hear, who just has a kid and is trying to, you know, keep his career alive while everybody's like, dude, you cost too much money. Stop investigating shit and just write regular articles like a normal person. But Victor finds his way onto a case that happens to involve this kid, Daniel Leger, played by Antonio Olivier Pilon, who basically is in jail in Thailand, even though he's a Canadian citizen, supposedly on being a heroin smuggler kingpin. And we kind of see parallels to their story as he kind of meets up with Jim Gaffigan, a guy named Picker, who is kind of a low-grade crime lord in the area, as well as Stephen McCaddy, who plays Frank Cooper, who is a Canadian Royal Mounted Police detective or DEA equivalent officer, I guess. And
I believe they're the Canadian Security Intelligence.
Okay. So basically, these all combine together in the story to find out what really happened to get Daniel Leger into prison in Thailand and if there was some conspiracy or not, all while Hartnett's kind of flying around the world from Canada to Thailand and his family at risk and kind of trying to deal with that. This all takes place, I believe, in like the late 80s and is actually based off a true story. And that's kind of the main gist of this film, because there's not much more than that going on.
Right. It's the early days of the war on drugs. And the U.S., we find out, is kind of pushing its partners, its neighbors to the south and north, going, hey, we're sending you all money to, you know, stop drugs. We need to see some results. And what happens when, you know, an intelligence agency decides to cut some corners? And that's, of course, where our friend Victor comes in. Josh Hartnett looking like he's got the porn stash going. And you know he's cool because it opens up with him grilling some guy about, like, a corrupt foster care system in Canada. And then he walks out of his interview and he's being chased by mob goons. He practically leaps over the hood of his little sports car and goes on a high-speed chase. Why? To get to the hospital where his wife is having a baby. I mean, it's so front-loaded to make it like, look how cool he is. I'm like, oh, come on.
Well, they were also trying to hit the dramatic movie-like bingo all-square thing because it was, it's the, oh, he's late to the birth of the child. And, yeah. No, honey, really, what I do is important. Yes, but now you have a family, and that's all of that stuff. Like, just check the little boxes as you go.
The hardest part to believe in this movie, there's multiple times where Canadians are supposed to be threatening people, and I was just like, guys, at least try to state reality.
Well, we should also note that...
don't piss off our Canadian fans.
We should note that one of the producers is the guy the story is based off of, so...
Correct. In fact, both real guys, the reporter and the ex-con... were involved, although for the movie, they changed his name. His real name wasn't Leger, but when we meet Leger, he's kind of like gotten out of a prison release program. He's not a hardcore criminal. He doesn't even really have a criminal record. He's bounced around from like foster care, juvenile institutions. He's
basically a junkie loser.
Yeah, he's basically the junkie who got kicked out by his family and is doing what he can to scrape by.
Right. He's pretty much a nobody. And in the course of this movie, we see that he becomes the fall guy when he bumps into Jim Gaffigan. And it's always kind of interesting to see Jim Gaffigan, like, you know, cursing.
Yeah, I thought the exact same thing.
Yeah. You know, I was like, this feels like it's a... I mean, I'd like Jim Gaffigan, but it does feel a little forced because the first time we meet him, you know, he pulls the classic kind of, mob trope of, like, you know, being really fucking scary and looking like he's about to blow your head off. And then he's like, I'm just fucking with you. You see, look at his face. I had him going. I'm like, oh, it's going to be that kind of character, is it? But he sells this guy out for money. He needs money. So he tells the Canadian equivalent of the FBI, like, look, if you give me some money, I can give you a high profile drug dealer. And he offers them up this poor schmuck. And did anybody have any moment where you go, how can nobody see that this guy isn't the guy everybody thinks he is?
Thank you.
Yeah, because Stephen McCaddy is like playing his usual asshole who's like, no, man, I got to be right. I need this case. And it's like they try to layer it up, but there's no way anybody thinks this kid is assured enough or connected enough to actually man a drug deal.
Right. I mean, his only thing is that he went to Thailand once and got high. So they're like, that's like the part of the story they think rings true. Well,
yeah, but I mean, that's a Marco Saturday night. Come on,
boy. Yeah, well.
One thing that I wanted to, you said that I want to focus in on was forced. This whole movie felt forced. The direction, the weird editing, the some of the dialogue, like, okay, the beginning when Josh Hartnett, Victor, he rushes, he gets in his car and he rushes to the hospital. The first nurse he sees has this quirky, quippy dialogue, like, oh, you missed, you know, something like you missed.
I think
you
that's his sister-in-law, by the way.
I mean, yeah, we find out later, but even then. That's still kind of a goofy thing to say up front, and especially we don't know who she is. And then later on, you know, every character has some type of quip that they throw out to say. They'll say something like this, or I can't think of any at the top of my head, but I just remember hearing that. And or even like with Josh Hartnett, when he was talking, he's like, he was saying that he was upset because they wanted to put him freelance. He's like, that's not how I write. You know, I have to do this or this. And it's just like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, it's just everything seems so just.
That's one of the things about this. They spend a lot of time making it look like all of this is about his ego. And then like an hour and 25 minutes in, his wife makes this comment about him being a social services kid. And it's clearly then supposed to be, oh, I could have been this kid that I'm trying to save.
And it's like, it's a little late in the game for you to try and make me feel like this guy actually has a noble purpose.
Yeah.
But I think that's part of the problem. And I don't know how much of this is related to the fact that that Victor and Elaine Olivier, the actual criminal kid, had a hand in producing this, because these guys seem virtually angelic and everybody else is crooked. Everybody, it's all about literally everybody else. It's the system. Now, there are some points that I think are valid, because McCaddy and his guys, you know, they make some stupid decisions, or they're willing to overlook stuff because there's money in it for them or for their budgets if they have these big busts and stuff, which is one of the things I think they sort of focus on periodically, is the war on drugs was mostly a war on losers and about people, about departments trying to puff up their budgets. So that's great, but I don't need 2 hours of that.
So I agree with that. My big thing, because they were talking about the war on drugs, I know obviously we're looking at this from the, you know, the Canadian side, but at the same time, it felt like a missed opportunity to not mention people of color as they were mentioning the war on drugs. I was like, all right, it's right there, and you're just going to, like, all right, whatever. Yeah. The thing, as far as Victor's concerned, my big thing with him is, he is essentially a Boy Scout wanting to just do the right thing, which, honestly, we need more reporters like that fucking now. My big problem is there's a point where he gets threatened. I think it's about an hour and 10 minutes in. And this guy goes, oh, you know, as long as you, you know, play ball, you'll stay safe, or something that to that effect. And the fact that he doesn't immediately call home and go, hey, honey, could you go to a friend's house or to your mom's? I was like, really, dude? Like, because they even say at a point that he's been investigative, that he's been a journalist or whatever for like 15 years. So it's like, this can't be the first time you've been threatened. So I would think you and your wife would have had a conversation about, okay, if this happens, you need to go, you know, A, B, or C. And yet,
I mean, the mafia literally shows up at your office, your place of work, and goes, like, we see another fucking story in the paper. And I'm like, oh, this is so quaint. People were used to be afraid of newspapers. Yeah. But hey, it was a thing back then. But yeah, Hunter's right. This guy has, he's depicted as someone who goes after the truth no matter what, sometimes to the detriment of the people around him. But this is not new. I mean, they established that in the first couple minutes. This guy has enemies, so it's really weird that he doesn't take it seriously.
Yeah, and just real quick, two of the quick things. One, this reminded me of a way better film that came out, I want to say it's 2014, called Killed the Messenger with Jeremy Renner, which I love that movie. It was on my... it was one of my top 10 favorite films that year. And I kept watching this going, I know it's unfair to keep comparing it to Kill the Messenger, but Kill the Messenger was an infinitely better film. And this feels like the first draft that someone threw away outside of a diner and someone went, oh, I can use this. And it's like, God damn it, movie. Like, it just, it goes on too long. And then the wife being played by, oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, yes, way too long is one of my biggest complaints with this movie.
Yeah, like, this could have been an hour 40, easy. Yeah. And then two, having Amanda Crew be the wife, I just don't see her being a dramatic actress, because she was in that one shitty Zac Efron movie. Which one? I know. I think it was Charlotte St. Cloud that she was in.
Oh, crap, I forgot that movie.
Yeah.
And are we sure we're talking about the same person? What did you say their name was? Because I thought her name was Rosemarie Perot.
No. His wife. Because
according to IMDb, the wife is Rosemarie Perot.
No. That's the girlfriend of
Daniel. Yeah, that's the girlfriend.
Oh, okay. I don't see the name you're mentioning on the wife IMDb
doesn't even make,
page,
like, top, you know, cut of IMDb.
You know what? God knows they don't get everything right. Keep going, Hunter.
Yeah, so I want to say it's Amanda Crew. Yeah, it is Amanda Crew, because she's on Silicon Valley. Charlie St. Cloud. God, I'm sad I knew that. Yeah, it's her. And she's a Canadian actress, go figure. But she's not a dramatic actress. And it really shows here, because there's a scene where they're having the silent talk where she's like, you know, I miss you, babe, and come home. And man, that is maybe my least favorite scene in the movie. I'm like, this is giving me fucking nothing. This is terrible. Yeah. So, yeah.
The biggest thing, as I said, is for me definitely the length. It's 135 minutes, and you feel it. Like, this is not a disinteresting story. I mean, this is a really interesting, you know, abuse of power, crime, and, you know, the war on drugs story that we haven't heard, especially in the United States. And there are some really interesting aspects, but, like, whenever they try to get to that, like, there's the almost, you know, usually expected he's attacked in prison, in the Thai prison scene, and that's not even that interesting, because I'm just like, look, I need this movie to get to more of its point, because this isn't even that interesting when I want the point. And it just keeps going and going. We don't need every scene that we're talking about of, like, him calling home and stuff like that, but when you have over 2 hours of runtime to do that, it feels like it's missing so much. Like, if they cut this down, you could forgive a lot more of those weak performances or weak motivations and, you know, grandiose, you know, he's the hero being chased by bad guys and look how cool he is. Because when it's shorter, you kind of just like, all right, cool. You told an interesting story and you moved. This doesn't move. Like, I felt like my whole night was wasted after watching this.
It suffers from having basically three protagonists. Because we expect to have the dual protagonist of, you know, Leger and Malarek, Victor, the reporter and the ex-con. But you spend almost as much time with McCaddy and his team as they try to set up this sting operation in collaboration with the Thai government. And, you know, of course, they're cutting corners. They're, you know, trying to do some shady shit to justify what they're doing. And yeah, it's like, you got to pick one. Any one of these characters is kind of interesting, but splitting it up between three almost equal leads in a 2 hour film, ironically, makes it just feel longer than it really is. It feels choppier, but also longer. Like, if this were like a three part, like a mini series where you're like, okay, we're going to take you each step of the way through the investigation. If this was like the Canadian version of The Wire, this could be gripping. But instead, it's all crammed into 2 hours and probably something that happened over the course of many years. And then the editing is original. It's kind of, you don't understand the time frames at first. It's one of those movies that goes, oh, you thought you were watching this, but we actually just flash backwards in time. And you have to catch up to it, and you're like, oh, I get it, what you're doing now, well, but it just seemed unnecessary. Yeah, no.
With the thing we keep harping on is the editing, and that's absolutely true. But one other aspect that bugged me was this really needed some style. Hunter, you brought up Kill the Messenger. Yes. That's an excellent movie that's about intensity. I was thinking something like Oliver Stone. You know, someone who he does something dark, but it's still kind of funny. Because there's parts in here that are supposed to be funny, but they're just not funny. Like when you see the FBI agents mess up, or not the FBI, I'm sorry, the Canadian security forces, they mess up. It's supposed to be like, oh, that's they're kind of bumbling. This should have been shot in a way which was, it was like these are intense dark moments, but then there were subtle bits of humor. Because like through that all that thrilling aspects, they're still fools. And that's something that could have been better with someone with even like Tony Scott could have made that work, you know, something just because
this feels like TV. This feels like a television. This feels like a prestige television film from like the late 90s, early aughts.
Yeah.
And we expect even TV shows to have a more cinematic feel to them now than ever before. This doesn't feel acceptable in 2020. It's not bad, but it's so conventional that it doesn't allow itself to rise above the material, which feels very, I mean, I'm sorry, I know it's a guy's life, I know it must have sucked, but that's an interesting story and it deserved to be told in a much more dynamic fashion.
So I have to respectfully disagree with you on one point you just made, because I think this is bad, because I'll give points for an attempt of just trying a concept and just missing. But we've seen this done before. We've seen this done better. I mean, it's almost a template. at this point. And the fact that this is just so goddamn boring at points. I started my day watching this and I was an hour in. I was like, oh, for the love of God, is this over yet? like you know, like Chappelle's Show, wrap it up, B. Like, I was just ready for this shit to be done. And there's a random time jump in the movie that I just went, wait, what? I was like, we're jumping ahead like 9 years? Okay. Like, but there's no concept of time. Shit just kind of, there's no flow. Like, I at London, I think you said there's no style. There's just no flow between the scenes. It seems very just like, oh, that scene's done. All right, on to the next one. But it doesn't gradually flow between the scenes. It almost feels like they're all a bunch of separate shorts that happen to be, you know, cut together to make a film. And that's a problem. I will say, this got better for me the more it went on. It got a little less insane. It got a little less goofy. It seemed to kind of have a scope of focus by the third act. But there is this point, and I'm going to attempt to dance around a spoiler here. But there is a point where the guy who's set up to be a sucker, there's just this point where he goes, oh, I'm not going to do this. And the guy's like, oh, no, no, it's fine. And I'm just sitting there looking at it. I went, there's no way you wouldn't run. Like, there's no way you wouldn't go, no, this is a very not good situation. I'm out. And he stays. And I went, nah, man. Like, at a certain point, you're the dum-dum and you should have just left. And and Jim Gaffigan, I'm gonna call. I thought he was bad. I really thought he was bad. I felt like
he was distracting.
I thought Jim Gaffigan, it felt like he watched Uncut Gems and went, "I can do that." And no, you can't. Sorry, man. Like, this is not.
I thought everyone was bad. Be honest.
I thought Josh Hartnett was honestly trying.
Because anytime I want a Joe Pesci-like character, Jim Gaffigan is the first guy I always think
of. I think Hartnett was doing his best with what he had and pulls off the best performance here, and that's still not saying much.
Yeah, I mean, true, but I mean, this wasn't Hollywood Homicide. It could always be worse, you know?
No. But I mean, I kind of like Hollywood Homicide, but not in a good way, in the way that's like, yeah, this is the worst thing I can do while drunk.
Okay, fair enough. So, like I like Jingle All the Way. Okay, cool. But I don't know. I thought Josh Hartnett later on in the film, especially where the film ends up, I thought that kind of last scene that he's in, I was like, okay, you're actually kind of bringing it here. But it's just marred by the fact that this is, again, too goddamn long. There's so many characters that they just introduce. They kind of pop in the screen and then pop off. There's a scene where he gets fired, and it feels like he gets fired like two more times throughout the movie. And I was like, that's kind of weird, but it doesn't feel like he's getting fired. It just goes to another scene. It's like, oh, I'm working here now. I'm like, wait, where was the scene?
And his boss doesn't feel very compelling either. Like, I'm very disappointed in you. You're fired. And I'm like, I'm sure this guy is the star of his local community theater, but I know it's a small role, but Jesus Christ, you needed a more interesting actor to bounce off of Josh Hartnett.
He's less interesting than the editor firing Fletch.
Yeah, so you know what? We've been going on for a bit on this. Why don't we start rolling up into our final thoughts? London, why don't you go ahead and go first, please?
Yeah, I think we all just laid it out. Bad editing, too long. The dialogue was so amateurish and laughable. The performances, and Hunter, I can't agree with it. I think everyone was bad. I don't know if
Fair enough, man.
Jim Gaffigan stood out. I'll give you that. But I didn't like anyone. I thought Josh Hartnett was posing the whole time. I think it really did suffer from it's. And now this is a odd comparison, but the Straight Outta Compton movie. That movie was good, but one of the issues that it had was two of the characters were, you know, real life, and they had such influence on the story that it worked in that narrative. You can see their hands in it. And in this one, I can't help but see the hands of the two people who this movie is based off of. I see them in it, and there was so much of it where I could see, okay, they wanted this scene in there. The other guy wanted this scene in there. They wanted this speech. He wanted to explain why he did it. And it's like, we don't need all that. Just put focus on a direction, make it hyper stylized. If it's going to be funny, make it a dark comedy. This is perfect for that. Like I said, I think Oliver Stone or any, there's a slew of other directors who could have taken this material and done something interesting with it. But as it is, I think we all said our piece. It isn't good. And it's tough for me to say it's terrible, but Hunter, I do agree with you. I think it is bad. So I'm going to give this 6, I don't know, Lost Issues of Toronto Sun out of 10.
Okay, Luwain, jump in there.
I guess this movie's okay. I mean, it looks okay. It sounds okay. It's not, I don't think it's awful, you know, but it's not, I don't recommend it. I'm not going to get excited about it. I mean, it's obviously, I think part of the problem is it's got a bunch of things it's all trying to do at the same time, right? Like, it's clearly taking a shot at the whole drug war thing, and it's taking a shot at police corruption, and it's pointedly reminding the audience of the importance of journalism and the cause of justice and all that, which all of those things are important, especially right now. But you've probably seen the broad strokes of this thing in a million other movies. So if you connect with any part of it, you know, the cast or the characters or the locations, I mean, Thailand looks okay in this, whatever, maybe you won't view it as a waste of your time, but it just really, I didn't need 2.5 hours of this, or I needed 5 hours of it, one or the other. Like, if it needed to either get really in depth and make me actually care, or it needed to be shorter and just kind of get to where it was going. I don't know. I'm kind of on the middle on this. It's like 2.5 out of 5 episodes of Miami Vice that I felt like watching after hearing nearly the entirety of In the Air Tonight when they introduced Jim Gaffigan.
Oh my God, I forgot about that scene. And Luwain took the... Luwain took the words out of my mouth, because I was actually going to say this. I like this better when it was Miami Vice.
Yes.
And, you know, in the 90s, you know, like, this would have been an okay 2-parter, you know, of Miami Vice, the Canadian version. But yeah, so way to steal my thunder, Luwain.
You're welcome.
but no, it's a great analogy and it's spot on.
How much did they pay for In the Air Tonight?
Way too much. They must have paid by the minute, because you heard the whole fucking song. Mm-hmm. Ben, please tell me you got something positive to say about this movie, because I don't know if anyone else does.
I kind of do. I mean, I didn't hate this movie. It is, though, on average, just workmanlike. And again, like I said earlier, if it was shorter, it honestly could have been accepted. It was even 30 minutes shorter, because, like, you guys can tell me if I'm wrong. I think, honestly, if they just didn't have them continue to flip-flop on whether or not Leger was actually going to go to Thailand, when we know he's going to go to Thailand, I feel like a third or a quarter at least of this movie is him going, I'm not going to do it. No, you're going to do it. And then they putz around for another 5 minutes. They come back and he's still saying no. I'm like, just fucking show that the cops paid for him to go already. We know this. Stop wasting my fucking time. And that's the problem with this movie, is like, there's a lot of just enough interesting story there that I didn't completely fall off. You know, again, I think Hartnett does his best with it. I've always liked Hartnett. He's actually why I signed up for this. Ever since, like, Lucky Number 11, I've been a big fan of his. But he can't save this movie. You know, Jim Gaffigan's doing nothing here. I will say, like, I do kind of want to read the book, because hopefully it doesn't fuck around as much as this, because the story is interesting. But honestly, outside of the fact that we're all stuck at home and have nothing to do but watch movies for the most part, I can't really recommend this to anyone, when there are better movies about, you know, investigative journalists and the government screwing over the little guy and trying to uncover that. We've talked about some of them already. So overall, I'm going to give this 4.5 out of 5 boat trips, but you get to keep the tip.
Hunter, go for it.
Ah, sweet. Cool. My time to shine. Okay, so this is just... this just isn't good. Like, I wasn't mad, but I was, like, I was very irritated. It's like that random movie that I'm sure no one remembers. That movie, Big Miracle, with John Krasinski and Ted Danson and Drew Barrymore, about them saving the whales. I was just like, this is dumb, but I'm not pissed, but I wish I had my time back. And that's pretty much where I am with this. I'm going to butcher this girl's name, but Rosie Marie Perillo, who played the girlfriend.
Oh, Rosemary Perot.
Yeah. Oh, my God. She is. I would kill every single one of you on this review to be with her. This is the
girlfriend from the pawn shop.
Yeah.
No, dibs, man.
Yeah.
Sorry.
The moment I saw her, I was like, oh, my God. I was like, hello, Hot Topic. How are you? But outside of that, there's really just. This movie just gives you fucking nothing. If you want to see a good film about journalism, watch Spotlight, watch Kill the Messenger, watch The Post. Yeah. I mean, there's several great examples. Lions for Lambs. There's several great examples. This is not one of them, but this is a perfect Sunday afternoon. You're hungover. This, you turn on your TV. This happens to be on, so you have it on as background noise. That's exactly what this movie is. No more, no less. So I'll give this, oh Lord, 5 out of 10 great Josh Hartnett mustaches that aren't as good as Chris Evans' beard out of 10.
Well, I really can't add too much more to what you guys have already said. I think we're all in agreement that this had potential, but it's done in a pretty workmanlike, pedestrian manner.
Yep.
I think kind of agreeing with London here that, you know, a good director could have done something different with it. The exact same script, even with its flaws, even with this cast, it's possible that someone who had more of an eye for style could have pump this up a little bit, because honestly, I know we talked about the little car chase scene at the very beginning of the movie, and then, you know, towards the end, once we're in Thailand and the sting happens, there's some good moments in there. It's not flashy, but it's like, okay, I feel like I'm watching a sting operation in Thailand. Way to go. But this is not a movie with a lot of action. This is a lot of people talking, and they're on the phone, and they're on boats talking to other guys that they have to go meet in a park and talk to them, and then guys walking and talking down hallways about budgets and things. Again, this is a material that I think would have been better served by a longer running time cut up into several episodes. That might have been a really good sort of novelistic approach to what is not an unimportant story. But today, in this day and age, I think we all expect a little bit more from our entertainment. And this feels like something I've seen a lot and done better in other circumstances. Yeah, I can't give this more than, 5 out of 10 smuggled bags of heroin and coke in the back of something, whatever. I can't even get up worked up enough to really think of something, guys. This is so, if you ask me, like, show me the platonic ideal of mediocre, you know, it look up middle of the road, you know, it's this movie. It's like, it's so square in the middle. It's like, it's not horrible. It's not good. It's just, eh. Yeah. Kind of like Canada. Okay, I have now pissed off all of our Canadian fans. But not as bad as... You know what? The Canadians are swell people. I have never met a Canadian I didn't dislike. I haven't met many, but everyone...
That you didn't dislike?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You know what I mean. They've all been nice people. They're like Minnesotans. They're all polite. Until you meet that one guy who's a dick.
Yeah, Bradley, like your people, we apologize for Marco.